Welcome to Coffee and Contemplation with Susan Dunlop. Hello, I'm Susan Dunlop, a self-leadership coach and Three Vital Questions facilitator living in Noosa, Queensland, Australia. If this is the first time you've joined me, welcome. And if you've been tuned in before, thank you for coming back. People passionate about what they deliver to the world intrigue me and make me want to know what, how, and why they do what they do. I choose to surround myself with people who set magnificent visions, take risks to do good things in service of others, and are kind-hearted, purposeful, and wise. Guests joining me on the Coffee and Contemplation podcast are invited to share their personal stories with vulnerability for the benefit of others and are people with either or professional and experiential knowledge of the theme of each episode. Today's guest is Adeline Heng. She lives in Singapore and is a digital creator who sees herself as a lighthouse, shining the path for busy mums to thrive in their anguish and find delight in life without compromising quality time with their kids. In response to my request to come on the Coffee and Contemplation podcast, Adeline responded, "Hi Susan, I love your podcast idea featuring raw and real stories. Life threw me a curveball and I fell into a rabbit hole of despair. This year has been a total roller coaster ride. I learned a great deal about myself, the lessons from childhood, essentially how to turn the mess into message, to go from victim to victor and from tragedy to triumph. I would love to speak with you and discuss how I can contribute and serve your audience." So, that said, welcome, Adeline.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on the show after we've been planning this for a few months now, pre-Christmas, and now we're in the next year, so we'll see where the next year is taking you.
To be honest, I've just recovered from COVID, just tested negative this morning, and I'm feeling great, and I'm so excited to be able to share with you what a tumultuous year 2023 has been and the lessons, so many lessons I've learned and that's built me up and to this woman that I am today now.
Beautiful. I'm really looking forward to digging into the topic. And that's what I was going to say next is I love it when guests give me a choice of interesting topics. And that's rare. But today we're going to speak about the topic called The Courage to Choose. Find strength in making decisions and the perils of overthinking. And the reason why I selected that from the list, and the list was really interesting, as I said, was because this topic is relatable for both of us. We're both in our 50s. We're both, even just before this episode, have been discussing, you know, the movements of adult children and how we navigate that stage of our life. And in my day job, I talk about the default reactive mindset versus practicing conscious choice in my work as a Three Vital Questions facilitator. And Adeline and I have discussed that a little bit as well on the side. So I was interested to learn about what Adeline is delivering to her audience and clients. So Adeline, I shared in the intro that life threw you a curveball and you fell into a rabbit hole of despair.
Yeah.
Let's start with the scam you told me about, and maybe if you can elaborate on the scam and the effects of that on you.
Right. Well, at the end of 2022, I responded actually to a message via WhatsApp for a job, and I just went into it. And before I knew it, I think I lost quite a lot of money. And at that point, I actually wondered if that had been a scam, but as usual, the scammers would say, no, we are a legit company and blah, blah. And to cut to the chase, it reached a point where I could no longer give more money because I had already exhausted my own, you know, lifetime savings. And I even went onto credit card loans and I was really at the end. I could not come up with more. And at that point, I had put in close to $500,000.
Wow.
So some friends advised me to make a police report, and the police told me to stop, don't give any more money. And at that point, my husband was not aware of it. I had to build up my courage to break that news to him that, look, I've lost all my money. This is my lifetime savings, and he really rose to the occasion, shocked me, took over all my loans, paid off all the debts, and assured me he'll be walking with me. So in all, I learned that I have a very dependable husband. I have children who are really understanding and very loving family who helped me through that time. But as a person, I could not stop beating myself for being so stupid, for falling into such a scam when I'm an educated, I'm supposed to be smart. But my husband assured me, no, it has got nothing to do with intelligence. It's just vulnerability. I think, you know, you just fell into it and it can happen to anyone. What's important is you're safe. Your health is not affected. And that really helped me to feel like a real person, just a mistake. However, having that assurance does not mean that one is okay. Just like my case, I had to daily be aware of it. But there were days that I felt sorry for myself and, you know, pity parade. And I was just, when negative thoughts come, I think one thing leads to another. You know, I just went down into the rabbit hole and I would stay there. And even though I know that I would not take my own life, because the reasons for not taking my own life is that I don't think I can die. Because it, you know, those actions will not kill. And if it doesn't kill, then I think the downstream effect is even worse than where I am. So I didn't want to do that. But I was really conscious that once we start entertaining those suicidal thoughts, one day, I think that there would just be that push, and that's how people take their own life.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I'm really thankful that I have a religion and I have a very loving family who have been here to make sure that nothing like that happens to me. And during that time, I realized that I also can use this story to inspire other women. You don't have to go through a scam, right? We all go through challenges, and each challenge can bring us to places where we don't expect ourselves to be. Ever since I've connected with Susan, I've learned quite a lot about how it's so easy for us to go into victimhood. Yes, and it's really having that awareness and having that intention to not go that way and to learn a new way of responding to these events and circumstances and grow from it.
Yeah. And I shared with you, Madeline, the book, The Power of TED, which is the foundational piece of the work that I delivered, because I needed to find that when I found it. I needed to see that there was a different way to operate in life when the go-to has been the default, you know, victimhood, rescuer, persecutor roles within our own families of origin, or in the just the way society is, I think, is we go into drama. So I'm glad that we managed to find each other in this planet that we live on and to have engaged for the podcast. But it has helped us to be able to share that bit of information that I'm glad it's given you another tool to make sense of maybe last year for you as well.
That's right. That's right. I think through it also, I've realized that I had been asleep most of my life, just sleepwalking through it. Even though I thought I was done with sleepwalking, I was still sleepwalking because of this tendency to, it is the method of operation for a lot of us to just go into it. So since gaining that awareness, I've learned to take emotional responsibility for myself and my emotions so that I don't fall into that. And that is also how I remind myself to stay awake. And it's also the word of the year for me this year, 2024, is awake. To be awake to needs and my own needs and my own emotions and all that, right?
Yeah, and I think with emotional responsibility, I know that we can't choose our emotions or feelings, that they come from something that's happened. But when you're talking about taking responsibility and being awake, is to me that you've actually become more self-aware with kindness to yourself. Is that the sense of it?
Yes, a lot of it. I think most people don't realize that it's important that we have to be kind first to ourselves. Otherwise, you can't pour from an empty cup. So I've got to learn to be really kind to myself first. That's not the first thing I do, actually. The first thing I do is to beat myself up. Why did you do that? And all those internal conversations have been very harsh. And so I've been advocating also, you know, taking care of ourselves first, being kind to ourselves, and being the most welcome guest in our own life. Yes.
Oh, beautiful. I like yeah. that.
You know, I think we have to be our own best friend. I mean, I have asked myself this question, who is my best friend? I don't have a best friend, so I've decided to make me my best friend.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that we were talking earlier on about the transitions we make as we go through this midlife process from 45 onwards. And it is quite a swing. I hadn't actually thought about that when we spoke earlier, but we have been used to being there, being those managers of our children's younger lives, managing the household, managing our jobs, all of that. And even though we will go on to still be having to manage other parts of our life, we're having to let go of some parts. And I think that's the part where we get a bit confused about who are we needing to care for, and maybe we should just care about ourselves a bit more.
Yeah, care about ourselves a bit more first. And then so we can take care of those around us. Because I think at this age, we not only have our grown-up children, some of us would have aging parents to take care of as well. And I've come to realize that, especially for caregivers of parents, it can be very taxing, because to see our parents grow old and... For some of us, I mean, I thank God that my parents are in heaven now, but they went through also the end stage of life, but in a different way from what I'm seeing my mother-in-law go through now. So she has dementia. And for children who have to deal with their parents, now see them behave like a child, I think it's very hard. And because my husband is the main caregiver for his mother, I can totally understand and empathize with him, you know, having to care for his mom like a child. You know, I am really impressed with his own self-awareness. He takes care of himself in a different way, let's just put it that way. I would not have taken care of myself that way, but that's his way of dealing with the stress, the trauma, the everything, the responsibility of being that caregiver. Because he was such a pillar of support for me, I have to also be there for him in a way that I know how to do. And thankfully, he doesn't expect me to do things that I don't want to do. So I think we have this awareness, and we know how we can support each other. Yeah. But of course, some days I'm not so aware, and I go into a little drama, but I'm learning.
In Singapore, in terms of the support of an elderly family member, do you have much in the way of care services? Like in Australia, we do. But do you have that?
Okay. I think maybe there are services, but maybe not as extensive. And also, I think the services available are more really for the patient. Like they have a daycare service for the elderly. But my mother-in-law is, before she was so serious, she didn't want to go there. So now, I think my husband wouldn't force her to go.
You know, I was just wondering what it was like over there. So you shared also that you learned a great deal about yourself and the lessons from your own childhood. Yeah. What were those lessons from childhood?
Essentially, I think as a child, I was so aware that I have to be a good girl, study hard, get good results. Why? Because that's the only way I could get my mom's attention, her affection, and her approval. I think back then, people were not so aware of so many things. Neither was I aware, right? But at that time, my mom, she only had me and a younger brother. And my dad doted on me. Because my dad doted on me, she felt that she had to give her attention to my brother. Because truly, To be very honest, my dad really didn't care about the boy.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
She said very clearly to me that, look, you cannot have both the attention of your mom and your dad. So I had to pay attention to your brother. And I think she didn't realize what that did to a child. I must have been, I don't know, 8, 9. I didn't understand where that came from. And I mean, I did not question why is it my fault. But I knew that I needed my mom's approval. And the way to get her approval was to be a good girl, get good results, study hard. And whenever I brought home my results, it was like, oh, you could have done better because so-and-so did like that. And I was like, wow, the bar keeps moving up. And so that kind of made me into this overachiever. And I unconsciously, I just, whatever I set my mind to, I would achieve because that's my goal. That's how I get my mom's attention. I think getting my mom's attention was such a key thing that when I first met my husband, when we were in what we call junior college here in Singapore, I was 17 years old. We were in the same college. And when I saw him, I told myself, oh, this is the boy. My mom would surely approve. No question.
Oh, wow.
I was so confident. And this boy was in my class. And eventually, we did get together. I don't know why. We did get together. And then when I brought home to meet my mom, there was no question. She said, this is a good boy and all that. Yeah. So now looking back, that had been such a major thing that to get my mom's approval. There's no question that she loves me. There's no question that I love her. It's just having this awareness. I don't have any ill feelings towards her, but it just made me who I am. And that was the thing I learned. In the last year as well, I've come across this course called Enneagram. And I found out that, oh, I'm an achiever because of my experience. Because all along, I thought I had been a peacemaker, a type 9. But no, actually, I'm a type 3, an achiever, due to my growing up experience of wanting my mom's approval because I wanted connection.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And you're not alone in that, I don't think.
Okay.
There's so many of us have been through that. And you think about it now, looking back as, you know, grown women that we are and in our own relationships. And really, it's about our parents not being able to communicate between each other as parents because she chose path to look after the son because he was doting on you, but wouldn't it have been so much healthier if she said, hey, husband, this isn't going to be the way it is. Let's love both of them equally.
That's right.
You know, but you can't see it at the time, though, can you?
No.
Okay, so how did you learn about the sleep and awake? You've talked to me about that. So when you talk about having sleepwalked all your life, what does that mean?
Let's just say that not having the awareness to how I'm feeling, what I want, because I was such an achiever, I was so acutely aware of what everyone expected of me, what my mom expected, what my husband expects of me, what my mother-in-law expected of me, and all that. You see, so I was just doing things to get approval. Now, not just my mom, but from my husband, from my mother-in-law. And when those approvals were not coming, I realized I have to do more or I go into, all right, that's it. That's it. I've done my best. There's nothing more I can do. I just, you know, go into what I call like be in retreat in this space of just maintaining peace with everybody. Okay. I would just be that yes man. Whatever you want of me, I'll do. Okay, yes, yes. And not paying attention to myself. And while I said yes, the resentment was growing.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So because I was denying myself so much, then I had so much resentment towards all these people, right? And guess what? 30 years later, when the resentment is so high, one day it will just explode, right?
Yeah. Did it explode?
I think for me, it it manifested in this way of not so much of confrontation, but in a sense of being, you know, I just became indifferent. I didn't care.
Indifferent?
Yes, indifferent. I didn't care. There was just no way of you affecting me anymore. You know, you can do what you do. I would just not care. I would just go on with my life. Mm. So I became, maybe I built up this defense to just protect myself without knowing, you know, that's my way of self-care, yeah. Right? Protecting myself that you can carry on. You want to nag at me, you want to whatever. I'm just, you know, shutting my ears. Yes. So that was my protection, and that was my way of also maintaining peace. So I didn't fight.
Yes, okay. So do you think in terms of when we talk about the empowerment dynamic or the drama triangle roles, what role would that be that you adopted?
Wow. That's a great question. Wow. This is I didn't think of it, but so victim, rescuer and persecutor, right? Wow. That must have been some big, okay. I really went into major victimhood. Yeah, because I felt so sorry for myself, right?
And it protects you. That's the thing. It's a childhood response that, you know, is our fight, flight, freeze and appease. They all are part of those drama triangle roles. So you protected your heart. Mm. And how do you do that? So it's okay that you've slipped into a victim-y space.
Yeah.
We call it victim-y, so it's not a victim. Just say victim.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so it protected your heart by doing that. So that's your asleep mode is what you had been, but now you've moved into a space where you're awakening, and as a catalyst from that scam and then the responsiveness of your husband, he didn't persecute you for what you'd experienced. It's like a shift you're making in your life, which sounds quite awakening to me.
Yes. Thanks for even asking me that question and making me realize even being indifferent is a victim mentality. It's a victim response.
Yeah.
That really had been the major part of my life. And I think it's okay having that awareness. There's no right or wrong. But it's really, now that I'm aware, let's just choose a different way of responding and not stay in insanity by doing the same thing and expecting something different.
No.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the gift of it, I think. I mean, and this is said, like, I know in understanding those roles of drama, you're not coming down on yourself for having had to be in those roles. They are the way you've needed them for some reason. But it's just lovely to understand them so you can say, oh, what emotions were attached to them that made me be that way at that time? And just to say, it's okay, well, that's, next time it comes up, I can spot it and then I can choose a different response. So that's the point of it, is being able to start to spot it faster and not live in it, because otherwise those other things like resentment and all of that start to just build up and build up. Not many relationships survive resentment.
Yes. At the peak of my resentment, I did retaliate, but in my way, which I think in these days, in the current day language, is called passive aggressive. So I was passively aggressive. I think the words I chose, the words I articulated were just, I think, plain hurtful. It must have been. Because I think there was so much resentment. The stuff that came out was just so toxic.
It's a toxicity that you can't stand anymore, isn't it? So you've got to try and shed it. But none of us have been taught how to communicate well as children. You know, it's like how the hell do we know how to do it as we become amateur parents and amateur husbands and wives? Because we've got no real role models of amazing communication to lean on, have we?
And I think back in the day, there was no internet, right? You have to go to the library. And what book do you borrow?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know. Life was probably simpler back then.
Yeah. So I think I spent so much time reading novels. It just built up these expectations of life, what life should be. And and when my real life was just so different, that's how I think I stayed in that victim mode.
Yeah. So what was the epiphany or blinding flash of the obvious that now led you to be ready for change? Because you clearly, from what I've heard and the type of work you're doing, you've decided that change is necessary. And, you know, what did you do to summon up the courage to make change?
At my lowest point, I believe that there was this group chat that I was in. And this friend just shared this app called Headway. And it's a paid app. So it gives book summaries. As with all apps, there's algorithm. You specify your preferences. So I chose personal development, business, I don't know what else, because these were my interests. And then the books that came up for me, I love summaries, because in 10 to 15 minutes, I can finish a book, right? Okay, I get the main gist of a book. Looking through those books reminded me of the things that I have come across in the last 10 years. And it reminded me that I was just, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting something different. So I was basically staying insane, making myself insane. Also, it reminded me of, like, I think what I chose to focus on made the difference. And I was focused on what went wrong in my life, what were missing in my life, and all those things. And when I chose differently, I chose gratitude. I chose to see all the blessings in my life instead of what's missing. That made all the difference. And that was the beginning of how I pulled myself up. And I realized that focus is a choice, right? And I have to just let go of the things that are beyond my control, right? Let it go. And start taking action to take care of myself, number one, and to do everything that I can to learn these lessons and to live these lessons and not to fall back into the rabbit hole.
And you mentioned turning a mess into a message, so that got me curious. So tell me more about that. How did you make that shift?
Well, I reacquainted myself with a lot of these wise sayings that I've collected over the years, right? And in particular, it was this thing from Jim Rohn. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Really, it's true. Who I spend time with most actually shape who I am, right? And these also dominate our conversations. I've come to also appreciate the people that challenge my thinking, that gives me good questions to reflect on so that we can grow together. And also, because of that, I've also started a Facebook community. I've come to terms with the things that I enjoy doing, and I've decided that I would do more of that, share more of that as well. It's very easy for me when I see something on YouTube, I have access to these ingredients. I know the methods and I will try it. You know, my daughter says I'm very experimental in my cooking. So she's used to my different experimentations. And she knows that, okay, sometimes I cannot recreate that taste, but it's okay. You know, I think it doesn't really matter. I'm not like trying to create something that my mom used to make, right? Because that's going to be difficult, because unless I'm doing a business in selling that food, then I have to be consistent in giving that consistent taste. But at home, we're just cooking with love, right? So it's my way of nourishing others with my gift, my talent, because this is I didn't see it as a talent, but my husband emphasized, you know, in his challenger or coaching role, he told me that, look, you may not think that you have a talent in cooking, but look at how you can just watch the video at night and the next morning you create this. And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't see it as a talent. I saw it as just something I could do, you know. And yeah, he said, he told me in no less words that, you know, not everybody can do that. If no. you can do this, that is a talent. Please accept that. Following your heart kind of thing. Then it's, because I don't remember what I put the last time. But over time, I've been consistent with using certain things for certain dishes. So there's some consistency, but not in the way of writing it down in a recipe.
Okay. So that probably leads me to the other part of our topic. We were talking about the perils of overthinking. And that sounds to me like you're not having to overthink when you're doing this work with your gifts. So what are the steps or tips you've got around overthinking?
Overthinking. This is the four steps I follow to stop overthinking. First is to have awareness. This is really what we've been talking about this whole time. It's about having awareness of ourselves, of things, our responses, everything. When we have that awareness, we can then challenge negative thoughts, step two. And then after that, we practice mindfulness. And what's mindfulness? Just paying attention to ourselves. Remember to breathe. Remember to care for ourselves first. If that means saying no to something so that we can say yes to ourselves, do it. And about saying no, a lot of people misunderstand me when I say no. They feel that I am just not embracing others. So they kind of, why? Why do I have to say no? I respond to them, you only listen to half the sentence. Say no to others so you say yes to yourself.
Ah, yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. I actually teach a course in Learn to Say No, because it's such an important skill that young women don't know.
And because we keep saying yes to others, we are saying no to ourselves. And I'm an expert. I have a PhD in saying no to myself, right? So these days, I'm telling people, if you have to say no to others just so you can say yes to yourself, do it, right? Yeah. Mm. Care for yourself first so you can care for others. Finally, is to seek support, right? We may know all these steps, but a lot of times it's about also having a support structure, having someone to help us, to support us, a coach, a facilitator, an accountability partner, you know, to just keep us on track. It's not easy to be able to do this. Most of the time, we can't do this on our own. And that's why we need a community, right?
And just saying to Zaria, who was on the last episode, we were talking about the victim role. And I remember when I first learnt the work of The Power of TED, and David Emerald said, victims expect to be able to do it all by themselves, that they're not going to ask for help. A creator knows to ask for help and support. And the creator is our inner essence. We are that, but we just forget about it. We go to those default roles. So that's you in that, you know, the knowing that the creator in you is there, and finding that way to seek support is a really smart thing. Okay, so have you got a story or an example of an individual that you've helped find the courage to transform their lives?
Well, last year in my group, right, I offered this free service to my group members to help them, just to be an accountability partner for them. And one of them just responded, and I spoke with her, and I know I have been aware that she wanted to start her own radio show, so also called podcast. When we met on Zoom and we started talking, so I could see her face to face, she showed me all the equipment, her room, her microphone, her setup. And so I said, look, you have everything there. What's stopping you? And when she shared with me everything that was in the way, it was so clear that she was just focused on the wrong thing, right? Because just like me, when I was in that rabbit hole, I was focused on things that were missing. So when I highlighted it to her, she realized why she was procrastinating. And she said, okay, Adeline, I will do this at the end of this call, because it was morning for her. She's in the US and it was midnight for me, right? So she said, you know, after this call, I'm going to record my first episode and I'm going to share it with you. I told her, it's not about making a perfect episode, right? You obviously have the content, because she had been a pastor. And you just go on and record. It can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. Just do it. When I woke up, she sent me that episode. And when I listened to it, I was like, wow, you did it. You know, I mean, it's okay. Your first episode, bound to be hiccup. She tried to put music, it didn't work. But it doesn't matter, because what I heard was what she shared. And it was so insightful. And I told her, I was so proud of her, you know. I said, yeah, just keep going.
Yeah. All you can do is improve as you go
That's
along.
Right.
My podcast, I listened to the fellow who owns ClickFunnels, Russell Brunson, and he said to me, you're otherwise going to put makeup on every day and record yourself on video. I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. You're going to blog every day because you like writing. I can write, but yeah, that's not what I do. But he said, the other thing to do is start a podcast and start it tomorrow. Just do it. And said, don't worry about the video, just do it. So you can start having conversations with people. And yeah, the first episode was my niece and the dog was barking and it was just hell, but we just laughed. And, you know, my phone rang, I think, halfway through it. And, you know, but we just enjoyed the messiness of it. And I think that it just shows other people you're willing to give stuff a go. It's okay to give stuff a go. You got to start somewhere,
yes.
Don't you?
I think it's really taking that first step, and first step is always the hardest. And and then after that, you just keep going.
On from there. So we're about to finish up, and I just wanted to ask you, what would you tell 7-year-old you now, if you could, that would help her to find her confidence in decision-making and trust her own judgment?
Wow, the 7-year-old me. I think I've done this quite recently as well. Adeline, you are precious and wonderfully made, worthy beyond words and measure. You are not your achievements now, and know that you don't need an achievement. You don't need to be an achievement machine to be and be joyless and inauthentic to be loved. So believe in yourself. You also don't have to do anything other than what you desire of yourself. And today, these are things that light me up. For now, it is cooking, you know. And so this is what I'll do.
Oh, they are beautiful words and a nice place for us to end on. So thank you, Adeline. And thank you for all that you shared today.
Oh, thanks so much, Susan. Thank you for having me as well.
I love that you got to come on the show as we begin the year. It's been lovely having the opportunity to hear your story and how you've transitioned and evolved. And you seem to be like on a never-ending evolution now in the, you know, the middle stage of our lives. It's a pretty beautiful place to be in. Listeners, having no choice is not a good belief to live by, and having, say, 5 or 6 choices is optimal. But finding some place in between that and using what Adeline shared today, I hope might give you a light bulb moment or oxygen to get you moving towards what is important to you. I hope you enjoyed our time with Adeline today. I'll share in the episode description where you can follow Adeline on social media, and she's got some cool tips and a downloadable tool to share with you there as well. Adeline's episode has been broadcast across 7 or 8 streaming sites, including the one you're listening to now. You can also watch for opportunities to pose your questions to future guests via my Facebook and Instagram profile, Susan Dunlop, Lead, Believe, Create. I am forever thankful for my guests and the honour of being able to hear what they have to share is something that is a passion of mine. That's why this podcast is here. Trust that you are blessed even when you forget that you are blessed. Take care of yourself, and I look forward to being back soon. Bye for now.